Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Chris Mead back for another episode of My Biggest Lessons. I got my good friend Ash Malwani here over at Avi, CMO and co-founder. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. So I've been a longtime fan of Avi, what you guys have been building. We haven't actually got a chance to connect before, so I'm happy that we're jumping on this. Long time coming for sure. Just for the listeners, right? If you're not familiar with Avi, it's honestly one of my, the care package you guys sent over was filled with some of the most delicious, like healthiest shit I've ever tasted in my life. Give me some backstory on the brand and like what you guys are building.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the intro. Like I said, my name is Ash. I'm the CMO and co-founder of Avi. Health and wellness brand, you know, we started in 2019. Basically wanted to take down the collagen giants in the market with a little bit of a twist. So basically, if you go to any retail shop, you'll see some of these familiar brands in there. But the collagen that they put out is very unflavored and it kind of looks like, you know, it's kind of medicinal. So the route that we wanted to go in was we wanted to hit a younger demographic, right? The science behind collagen says you should be taking something to boost your collagen levels by the age of like your mid-20s, right? So what 25-year-old is going to voluntarily take collagen if it doesn't taste good or doesn't look good, right? So the whole vibe behind Avi was we wanted to have something that, one, tasted amazing by creating a cereal-flavored collagen protein. And we were kind of off to the races there. We started with two cool flavors, like a fruity cereal, a cinnamon cereal, and quickly from there exploded into 26 flavor expansions over the last 2 to 3 years. So yeah, I mean, that's a little bit about Avi.
It's crazy. I got the Reese's one at my house. I love the Reese's one. I'm a big Reese's guy, so that was sick to see. So what's your background? Do you actually care about collagen? Like, what was the, obviously, like, you guys saw a lane to go down. Were you like a food scientist, health, like wellness? What was kind of your background?
Yeah. So, I mean, our background was more so we were working at health and wellness companies prior to starting Avi. Myself and my two other founders met at another startup for a sports nutrition company. From there, we quickly started our own marketing agency, working with tons of other health and wellness brands. And what we kind of saw and learned was just certain trends that were happening within sports nutrition that weren't happening in health and beauty. We figured, okay, well, here's an opening for collagen. Let's take some of the trends that are working for sports nutrition, like whey proteins, pre-workouts, and the really cool flavors that a lot of these brands are doing and bring it to collagen and make this space a little bit more fun. So, I mean, our background was always marketing. So it's always trying to find different ways to put spins on old things. And so that's kind of where we started. And honestly, by the end of just creating the product, we really fully understood like the science that goes behind it, what added ingredients that we need to have to our, or add to our formula to actually make it work better than the others on the market. So first and foremost, a marketer, and then second, collagen expert.
I love it. So obviously when you guys started, right, Reese's wasn't willing to do a deal with you. Entenmann's wasn't doing a deal with you. Like, how did that shift, right? Like, originally, I'm sure you just had a cool flavor of collagen and branded it more towards sexy millennials. So 24-year-old Chris, you should be taking this instead of the shit you're getting at GNC. What does that structure now look like for a Reese's deal? I know we got 20 minutes on here, right? Like, how do you even get that to happen?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is tough because a lot of these legacy brands are, or at least at the time, weren't open to getting into industries that were outside of their norm, right? Okay. So for a brand like Entenmann's, 100-year-old brand based out of Long Island, they're pardon the pun, but their bread and butter is literally baked goods, right? Yeah. So like, it's just one of those things where how do they expect their brand to carry over into like a beauty category? And it's one of those things where once they start kind of opening up to it and they start looking at what their brand could look like on our packaging, putting their branded assets on our bottle with our logo and this and that. And I think one, that's the biggest thing is that you have to show them what it could look like because nobody, they don't know, right? So one, showcasing what their product, what our product would look like with their branded elements on it, how that look like on a shelf, how it would look like on the website, what could it possibly taste like, what our whole marketing strategy would be to incorporate their brand equity in with ours, right? So putting together a whole marketing plan was almost half of the battle. The other half of the battle was literally just, how is it going to look? Is it going to resonate with our consumer base? Are people going to get confused? So I think we did a really good job at kind of maintaining the integrity of their brand equity. When you go to like any store and you look at any ad cap, Entenmann's, you know, their symbol is literally their box, right? It's this classic looking box with their goods in it. And what we ended up doing was every order of our Entenmann's collagen came in a box that looked exactly like the ones that are in every end cap. So maintaining that image for their brand was super important for us and especially for them, but just instilling that trust in us, knowing that we were going to do that for them. I think that's one of the biggest ways to win when it comes to licensing some of these big names with their products. Yeah. And I mean, it helps us grow, but I mean, it also helps them expand into different categories and show that they're not just a baked good brand, but that they're more than just that.
Yeah, no, I love that. So we did some stuff in the past with Wilson. We're doing some stuff in the future for pickleball with Prince and a bunch of other big brands. What's your philosophy like on that? I don't know about in your guys' world, but in my world, I'm spearheading the conversation with a Prince or a Wilson. Do you like to come to the first meeting with all that marketing stuff already done? Like, here's the PDF and here's all the shit we're planning on doing for you. Or is it more, let's just see if they're even interested first? Because like, we have a lean team, right? I can't be wasting my graphic designer's time for a month or 2 weeks to build out a proposal for a marketing thing when there's so much that more that needs. What's the perfect balance in your mind when you're starting this? Because a lot of people listening are probably going to try to start poaching some of these people and try to build those partnerships.
Yeah, honestly, it is a lot of work, right? To really get ahead and to really catch somebody's eye, I feel like you do need to come prepared with something. If you're going to, we'll keep using Entenmann's as an example, or even Wilson, right? It's like going to them when this isn't necessarily on their radar, right? It's one, you have to interrupt their flow and be like, here's a pitch for you. Why should they care, right? I think the biggest thing that we went into each of those conversations was, here is what the end product could look like. Are you interested? Right. So at least you're getting them somewhat interested in having the conversation. And then, the marketing plan and things like that can happen to the end of the talks, but at least get them interested, show them what your vision somewhat looks like, and then take it from there. So we had our other co-founder, Ankit, who pretty much designed the entire brand and created it, just mocked up what he thought it could look like if we sold an Entenmann's flavored Avi super collagen protein. Again, that's something that might have taken a week, 2 weeks to kind of conceptualize. And then we reach out, right? And I think that does a little bit better than just like cold reach out, like, hey, we're a health and beauty brand. We really want to license your flavor. So which one's going to hit harder? Like the vision, or you're kind of just shooting yourself in the foot by just asking a random cold question. Yeah. So that's the way I think.
No, I appreciate that. And we're kind of doing a mixture of both. Like at first it's, yo, what's up? This is Chris from CrossNet, like four-way volleyball net. I think it would be a perfect collab with Wilson. Oh shit, we got a response back. All right, we're going hard for 7 days to come up with something. And now it's, all right, we have kind of a blank pitch deck. We sub in the logos whenever it makes sense, build the custom product, and then we're ready to go in like 4 or 5 days. So it's kind of build it, because you don't want to be over preparing, especially with your lean team. Yeah, when you talk about like submitting like requests like that, where are you doing that? Is it LinkedIn? Is it cold, like on their info at?
It depends. At least for us, I know we work closely with a really good broker. Some just don't really work with brokers and they just kind of go for it, right? But yeah, to your point, it's literally like checking out LinkedIn. Who's on the product development team? Who can you kind of connect with? Who do you really have a network with? Who can intro you to? I mean, those are the biggest things. Obviously, cold emailing is going to be your first approach, but I mean, if you can find somebody who's somewhat in your network or around your network, I think that's probably the best bet to go. But there's also brokers who do facilitate these deals. But again, it's up to the other brand if they want to be a part of these deals too. So kind of pros and cons to both.
Yeah. Cool. No, I love that. I know you're a performance marketer. I see all the videos all the time. That's kind of your bread and butter, right? So I want to keep this a little bit different than the normal conversations and questions.
Of course. But of course.
If you were going to build a brand and start over from scratch, right, 2022, what's something that's working now that may have not worked in the past, or something you're like, oh shit, I wish I would have done this 3 years ago? Yeah. For me, I'll lead that, right? Like with USA Volleyball, we buy dedicated newsletter sends on their email. Our email team will make HTML emails. We'll send them out with a discount code. It gets sent to their 150,000 audience, and it's dedicated just for CrossNet. And it's profitable. It's super profitable. And now I'm trying to stack as many newsletters as possible. So what's a good example that you guys are doing that you're like, oh shit, I wish we would have done this?
No, I think that's a fantastic idea. I think something very similar is kind of partnering with adjacent brands, right? Some brands that may or may not be kind of like in your vertical, but they're, like you said, their demographic is our target demographic. Very similar, just getting flyers printed out, sticking them into like orders. If it's another D2C brand, working out a CPA, a goal for both parties. Hey, like if somebody buys through this postcard, we'll give you a CPA straight off the bat. Usually that CPA is definitely a lot less than what's going on Facebook and Instagram. But I mean, between that and like really focusing on like TikTok organic, I know a lot of people have been talking about organic on TikTok. So I don't want to keep beating a dead horse there. But I think really, like you said, finding the alternative ways to get in front of people is plain and simple. Reach out to companies to partner with, a flyer printed out, like a little postcard or insert, have a mini pitch on it. Like, hey, this is great for hair, skin, and nails. Check it out. 20% off, whatever it is. Work out a deal with the other brand. Be like, hey, we're tracking through QR code reads or UTMs or even the discount code. We'll offer you guys a CPA. So something like that, I think, is hugely undervalued and not a lot of people are doing it. It's just more so, who can you reach out to, brand owners, this and that, who are willing to kind of cross promote. But yeah, I think that's one interesting way I think people can get started right off the bat. Investment is very little and you only pay when you actually get orders.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all. We just did a collab with another brand. I think you guys were actually in it. It was a summer giveaway. And we got like an email list of like 15,000 people. We were just in one or two giveaways together. I forget what it was.
Yep.
One of them, we just got like 15,000 emails and 900 phone numbers. That's for free. That's just for some free product. Like, it's insane. Try to stack those all summer long. It's great. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, name of the show, My Biggest Lessons. I want to hear about a fuck up. Something you wish you would have done differently. One on the performance side and one on the founding side. There's got to be, there's stuff for both. You're not just a marketer. Yeah. You're involved in the brand so much. Like, I want to hear some learnings.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you some on the performance side where it really, this is something that I've been preaching a lot lately, which is back in post-iOS issues and this and that, the Armageddon, as we're calling it. Basically, as a founder and as a marketer, I need to understand, okay, how the business is performing revenue-wise, growth, month-over-month growth. As a performance marketer, it's I can't control what's happening in the industry, right? Within these platforms, this and that. What I could control was increasing creative testing, landing pages, offers, everything that I could do after the click. And I just wasn't, right? I was so reliant on what was working before, which was working with influencers, relying on them to provide us content, this and that. And I didn't have control as a founder, as a marketer. I didn't have control over our, as dramatic as this sounds, I didn't have control over our destiny, right? So being able to kind of bring things in-house a few months after realizing, okay, hey, testing needs to increase like dramatically. That is where I realized, dude, like we were cruising all of last year until we hit a roadblock and we took a decline the last few months. And that is where I felt like I really messed up because I wasn't doing the fundamentals of marketing, right? I wasn't testing enough and things like that. So I think that's one of my biggest mess ups. Like I know, and I preach this, testing, test this, test that, and I just didn't do it. And I think that was the biggest mess up because I feel like we could have figured this, the solution out earlier than we did. And that's what it is. As a founder, honestly, I think there's two. We launched a superfoods formula, right? It has 35 superfoods, one single scoop, and it's supposed to taste like pink lemonade. Okay. 35 superfoods is definitely not going to taste good together. No. Obviously, the flavor needs to be masked with something great. And so when we got these like samples in, it to me was like, it was okay. It was just okay. And we just figured, okay, this is just the way it's going to be. A lot of these other greens companies, a lot of people complain about the taste. And I was like, you know what? All right, this is the best it's going to be. Let's just launch it. And we really should have took our time because when you come off of collagen protein, which quite frankly, like you said, like you really like the flavor. And I think that's why people come back and buy is because one, you're getting the benefits, but two, you actually crave it. Right. Yeah. So our customer base is trained to believe all our products taste amazing. And then when you launch something that's subpar, you're going to hear about it. So literally the week, 2 weeks after we launched this, everybody was super excited about it because they thought, all right, 35 superfoods, it's going to taste great. This company is great at flavors. And like the amount of people who were complaining in our community was endless. We had to stop production halfway on. We got half of our inventory and there was another half coming. We're like, all right, we got to stop. We got to redo this right now because people are going to complain. People are going to want to send it back. Refunds galore. It was crazy. So what we did was, like, back then it was really just a 3-4 of us. Now we have a bigger team. But what I wish we did was is get more people's opinions on the flavor and kind of give that feedback back to the manufacturer. So we literally had, I believe, a party at our office, right? Just a few guys came over and we're like, do you guys want to try like this product? And we literally gave it to all the guys and they're like, all right, you got to change this. You got to make it taste like this, blah, blah, blah. Sent that information back to the manufacturer and we got something back that actually tasted really good. And so I think that was the biggest mess up on our end because it's like, as a new brand, if you mess up one launch in the beginning, people are like, they can't execute, right? Luckily, we caught it in time. We kind of rectified the issue and people are like, all right, this is 10 times better. And we're like, all right, stop rushing these product launches. Let's take a step back, give the consumer what they want and what they expect from us. And every launch after that, it just kind of, it flowed very nicely and it was good. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Don't rush product development. Seriously. Yeah.
Right? Is there like a few go-to people that you go like for their advice on the tasting and flavor? Like I build sports for a living, right? Do you pay, I don't know, some like person to review it or like what's that process like?
Honestly, since then, we haven't had an issue with flavor. And what we're doing is now that the team is a little bit bigger, if there's no unanimous decision on a specific flavor of, all right, we're doing a taste test with 9 people in the office. If 9 people don't say yes, we scratch it. Because then at least it's a big enough sample where there's a lot of different people on our team, different flavors, different tastes, this and that. If every single one of those people like it, I have no problem saying, all right, let's launch it. But if one person's like, eh, then we'll actually scratch it and kind of get their feedback and be like, all right, how do we make it better for you? And then get another iteration done. Yeah. And once 9 out of 9 approve it, then we're good to go.
Are you planning launching stuff a year in advance? What's those time like for me, right? I'm launching a new company in July. It's all backyard games. Like we'll be much more public soon, but we just see shit on Twitter and we're like, yeah, like that's a good product. Let's get it going right away. Like, what's your guys' process? And like, have you figured out something that works for you?
Yeah. So I think it's a little bit easier than coming up with games just because you have the product and now it's just like, all right, what flavors do you come out with? Right. So what we've done is just in our Facebook community, which we have 50,000 plus members, how do we create flavors that are beneficial for you? Which ones are you guys excited about? This and that. So literally just sending out surveys. What flavors are you looking forward to? I think last year we got back like a list of 25, 30 flavors and literally sent it off to the manufacturer and said, we want all 30 flavor samples, send it over. Take your time, but send it over. Yeah. So as those start coming in, we start approving flavors in advance. And then we just have this like vault of flavors that we know that we can launch at any time if we need to. And then we'll plan out specifically, okay, well, this is a good summer flavor. Let's put it here. Or this is good Christmas flavor. Let's slot it here. So we have a vault of flavors that we've pre-approved all at once almost. And now we're just kind of rolling it out when we see fit. So it's a little bit easier than like, all right, I have to come up with games and things like that. But flavor expansions, it's like, hey, guys, what do you want? All right, we'll go get it made. And then if enough people want it, we'll just launch it.
Sick. You guys have a full-time community person like engaging with that Facebook group or what's the current marketing team look like?
Yeah. So for the community, we have a head of community, which kind of facilitates most of the conversations on a day-to-day basis. She also manages a group of admins and mods who originally were Avi customers, but were like super into the group, super like passionate about the brand. And we just kind of invited them to be like, hey, listen, if you want to help moderate the group, we'll send you free product every month. Just talk to the people in the community if they have questions that nobody's answering. So that's pretty much the community team. On the performance side, it's myself that I'm training a junior media buyer to pretty much replace me at the end of the day. Yeah. Have a whole team of graphic designers, videographer, video editor. And then the girls who kind of also handle like customer service over here love making TikTok. So they're on TikTok duty.
That's
so
perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the mix.
Okay, cool. What was the first marketing hire?
It was an agency. It was an agency. And then after the agency, it was another agency. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I'm bringing everything in-house. So yeah, the first marketing hire actually was somebody who was on customer service who I wanted to move up into the marketing team because just creativity-wise, you kind of want to promote from within. And you kind of ask your team like, hey, what do you want to learn? What do you want to do? You don't want to answer emails all day long, but what else do you want to learn about? And so finding from within and teaching your processes to like almost a blank slate is I think, most ideal, because it's tough working with an agency who thinks differently, especially coming from our side where we were a marketing agency at one point. So yeah, we like to do things a little bit differently than most. So yeah, I think, yeah.
That's cool. It's a good perspective. And last question for you. You guys have obviously, you're crushing it, right? You're on the podcast for a reason. Founding team. It seems like a unique group of guys, obviously very close knit. Why you guys? Why has it been so successful?
I love this question. I think when it comes down to it, all three of us had very specific skill sets. Myself, a media buyer. My other founder, Ankit, he's an absolute genius when it comes to branding and designing. He's an absolute wizard with Photoshop. And then Ron, who's the other founder and our CEO, he himself is a genius himself. A strategy, supply chain, finance. Like, this guy has like an insane skill set where you can literally plug us three in a room and just pump out brands, because you have the marketing covered, you have supply chain, finance, design all covered with just three people, where other brands might need to outsource for that from day one. So that, I think, is the biggest thing. And we've been working together for the last 10 years. We've gone through so many ups and downs together, and I think we figured out the perfect balance between working with each other. And yeah, there's going to be times where sometimes we're not on the same page, but we always revert and we go back and say, listen, we started this. We always said, if we're not on the same page, we're not doing it. So that's it. I mean, you set yourself some rules between the three of you or your founding partners. Make sure you all are not doing the same thing, because that's when you're going to step on each other. If I'm the media buyer, you guys, you have to live and die what I say, right? If Ron is talking about supply chain and finance, I have to live and die by what he says, because that is his role. That's what my role is. And again, with Ankit, right? If there's a design that he thinks it's going to perform better, and yeah, maybe Ron and I have our opinions on it, but he is the one that is the go-to for that, and we trust him with all our being. So that's the way we have to kind of approach it.
I love it, dude. It's funny because I say the same thing about CrossNet. We all just have different skills. If we're on top of each other, questioning each other's decisions, nothing would ever get done. You just got to trust exactly in your founders. And if not, like, the company wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Because I trust in your founders. And that's it.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much for coming on, dude. Ash, I really appreciate it. Go check out Avi if you haven't. The most delicious. And dude, I just ran out of the apple cider vinegar gummies. But just like, it's so funny how this stuff just becomes such a part of your daily life. Like, why am I excited to wake up and eat gummies? It's just such a weird feeling, but like, it's crazy. So congrats on everything you've built. I appreciate you jumping on, man.
I appreciate that. Thanks, man. Dude. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.